got Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man, are we really mediocre? That's what one analyst came on this show today and said, they're kind of okay. They're not great. I mean, you know, they're inconsistent. And, of course, he was talking about our Falcons. Now, that happened last hour, and some of you are up in arms about the fact that how you view our team and how we view our team is not necessarily how the national media and folks who look at the NFL as a whole views our team. Frank Schwab came on the show from Yahoo Sports and was like, they're okay. Mike, are we just okay?
Well, right now, guys, we're the 3 seed. We have the tiebreaker over Arizona based on our NFC conference record, but we have a bunch of conference games coming up with the Commanders, with the Vikings. We talked about the Giants. I mean, we think pretty good about the Giants. We got to win 4 of our last 7 to hit the 10-win mark. I know we spent all summer arguing 10 or 11 wins. We got to go 4-3 to hit 10. And we do have a road game with the Vikings. Now, the Raiders is still a road game. This Broncos game is no cakewalk. And the Chargers are playing really good football, more balanced than they've ever been since Justin Herbert came to L.A. But anyway, right now we'd be the 3 seed. We would play the Commanders. If by chance, Carl, we lost a few more games and still win the division, then we're the 4 seed. And right now we'd play the Vikings. The Vikings would come here.
Coming up in 3 minutes.
Can the Falcons slow down this blossoming Broncos offense? We're going to talk about it coming up. I want you to hear Kirk Cousins, and I want you to hear Raheem Morris, because both of them are talking about what is on our minds and has been on our minds and what we've been talking about. And Raheem, first and foremost, was talking about his preparation, the team's preparation, as they start to look ahead to the Broncos.
You know, Zeno, you identify what happened, right? That was a game of the good, the bad, and the ugly. Right, there was a lot of good, right, particularly from the second quarter on both sides of the ball, whether it's offense, defense, or special teams. And then there was some bad, right? There was the individual things that happen when you get beat on a one-on-one, whether it be a corner getting beat, whether you get beat up front from a guard standpoint or a tackle, whether you get beat on special teams when you're talking about the execution of a field goal. And then there was some ugly, getting a field goal blocked. You know, that's ugly. Not doing the right things when you're supposed to do, you know, getting beat on a quick snap by the Saints for a touchdown, things of that nature. Those things are ugly. Those are the things you want to eliminate. And just go back to normal football where you got a lot of good, there's always going to be bad, because that's our game. And then how do you clean those things up and get better and better in order to go out here and get you another win before you bye?
By the way, Big O, can you start that again for me? Did he say Zeno? Let me hear this.
You know, Zeno, you identify
okay, you
what
can
happened.
Stop it. Because I'm shocked that Zeno didn't stand up and say, you address me as Colonel. I'm really surprised that that didn't happen.
And thank you.
A chair to get tall enough.
Thank you, Zeno, for your service on Veterans Day.
I'm just saying. Coach is answering Zeno's question.
Go
questions.
Inspect the tank from in front of it.
He's right. It was the good, the bad, the ugly. And here's the deal. That's what people see.
Mm-hmm.
That is what people see when they watch our football team. It is not the brilliance of Kirk Cousins or the hands of Drake London or the speed of Bijan Robinson or the power of Tyler Algier. They see the good, the bad, and the ugly.
We, and I've been harping on this since the season began when we picked up Kirk Cousins, is we've got the skill position guys. You see it, you know, and not consistently, though. That's the point that Frank Schwab was making from Yahoo Sports. And that's true. Falcon fans got to admit that. The offense blew it against the Saints. The defense gave you the ball back. We can talk about the defense giving up the big home run ball to Marquez Valdez-Scantling, but you shut it down in the second half. You got the ball back. 3 and out. What are you going to do with it? And we had to settle for field goals that who either made or missed. And then, unfortunately, we screwed things up. We did get a nice series going. That Bijan run didn't sustain it. Me, myself, and I have always felt this team's going to have to score 30 points, and the defense will then take advantage of what we did in 16. 16, we always add up by 10 or 2 scores. That makes your pass rush look so much better because the other team can't even run the ball. But teams can run on us. And unfortunately, like this week, we'll talk about it here in a second, Bo Nix is mobile. Bo Nix has got nearly 400 yards running the football right now, Carl.
Yeah.
And if you remember last year, some of the same pieces are here from last season. We don't do well against those mobile quarterbacks.
So
how does you identify what happened, right?
Call me Colonel. So how do we slow down the Broncos? Well, first of all, you slowed down the Saints.
No, I said 400, 300. He's got 209. Sorry, I don't have my glasses today. Don't yell at me. Bo Nix has got 290 yards rushing this year.
So, yes, he can make a few plays with his feet. I get it. I am not as concerned about slowing down this blossoming Broncos offense because guess what? Ask Kirk Cousins this. How good was the defense for you on Sunday? Guys, this isn't about the defense. This is about the offense coming through when you needed them to. Cousins even admitted They gave us four straight three and outs. Listen to this.
Yeah, that was big. We just had to score more points. You know, we had time of possession. We moved the football. We stayed on the field. But we didn't score points. And, we shouldn't be leaving it in the field goal team's hands. We should be, able to finish drives with six. And when you settle for field goals, it tends to, make it hard to pull away.
Now, Mike, I know you were just talking about that, but I wanted our audience to hear Kirk Cousins discuss three and outs.
Right.
That is on the offense. So when we talk about how you slow down the Broncos, we've done a good job of slowing down all these offenses. Who's embarrassed us? Outside of Seattle. And that was a blown coverage right before the half that really put you behind the eight ball. Seriously. So you're going to be in the game, Mike. It's more about how this offense responds. And Cousins said it. Almost sounded like Arthur Smith right there. We got to score more points. Really?
The team that you said, the Seahawks game, and again, now we're chalking it up to flat. But and again, last week, I don't know what you call that other than just two parts of the two teams not working as a whole, offense and defense, to your point about they got the ball back in his hands. We're 16th in rush defense, Chris just said, and Mike Turtle just said in my ear. So we're on average right there, league average stopping the run. And we know we got a ball-hawking secondary. You know, we talking about pass rush, it is what it is. Either they blitz, and I think we blitz 48% of the time, I read yesterday from D-Led. We rushed on Sunday.
On Sunday.
So we're blitzing a lot. And we're still not getting home. You know, that's the problem. And the Saints got there, and they knocked the ball out of Kirk Cousins' hand. So we've got to be better in that area. The team that scored the most points against us were the Bucs. You know, they scored 30 against us in the win, then 26 in the loss, other than Seattle. That's a team, that's Baker Mayfield running around making plays.
Yeah, Chris, and by the way, I'm going to get on you, Turtle. What you are not factoring in when you start talking about where we rank with the run is how we get off the field on third down. If there is a stat that you could point out and say, and you can go back to Sunday, you can go back to any of these games, you're giving up yards, which puts us in the middle of the road, but we're getting off the field when we need to. Your offense is still getting the ball back. And that is a stat that you go, well, we don't really talk about it. By the way, the Broncos are only averaging about 19 points a game, right? So they don't score a lot. I think it was Chris who told us today, we were talking about this, Mike, they don't expect a lot of points to be scored in this game this weekend.
We're 28th in third down. We're still allowing our opponents to convert at 45.3%.
Does it feel that way?
Yeah, it feels that way.
It doesn't feel that way.
I mean, to me, third down, we bend, don't break. Teams march all the way down the field, and eventually we get the stop.
That's it. But that's the point. Like, you're giving field goals up, but you're not giving up touchdowns.
Yeah. It's almost bend over backwards and don't break defense.
That is the fundamental difference when you start saying, all right, we're giving up yards. And I'm talking about rushing yards. Chris was talking about where we are with rushing yards. And then you talk about rushing first downs. That's right. What I'm discussing. 404-726-0929. You guys can hit us up. I don't know how you feel about us right now. I've gone back and forth. I still feel very good about our team, where we can go. But Kirk is right about this. When you get the opportunities and you don't take advantage of them.
Yeah, I just think we can be better. We haven't played our best football. We're leaving things out there. And anytime you do that, it's extremely frustrating. So you come back to work and you try to put together that game next Sunday. You know, it's tough when you know how much offense we left out there today.
How much offense we left out there.
Right. And I felt we're going to be outscoring opponents to win, right? To win those 10 games. The Vikings, for what it's worth, they were just really flat against Jacksonville. They scored 12 points in that game. Now we got to go to their house, and it will be, again, Kurt said he's going to try to fight back some emotions, but he said he's not even thinking about that yet because it's still weeks down the road. You know, that Commanders game. That's another guy. You got to get Jaden Daniels on the ground.
You do.
You know, the Steelers, like it was the Commanders' defense that let them down at the end. Jaden Daniels was doing his part.
I thought he was going to lead them down for the game-winning field goal.
Right.
By the way, the two top-scoring teams in the league, no surprise, Ravens, Lions. Two top-scoring teams. Then you got the Bills, again, who are playing really well right now, and Mike just mentioned the Commanders. I think that's a surprise. If I told you the Commanders are averaging 30 a game, I don't think anybody thought before the season that would be the case, and they are. And Mike, you know, when you start talking about their star wide receivers, again, Alamide Zaccheaus was here, right, and he's playing for the Commanders and having a role for them and playing really well. Mm-hmm. You know, Terry McLaurin is really good. They've got a good running game. But it's interesting to say, all right, did you think they would be averaging 30 a game? We'll worry about them down the road. I am worried about the Broncos. I think defensively we'll be fine. Offense has got to do its part this weekend.
But again, you know, who would have thought Marquez Valdez-Scantling was going to have a career day, you know, against us? And they got Courtland Sutton. They got some dudes. And anybody else, like, no matter who it is, if you're not going to, you know, get the quarterback on the ground, those guys got a chance to run around and make some plays.
Coming up, we're going to talk to Joel Corey, guys. He's an interesting dude. He was an agent at one point. Now, he does a lot of Capology stuff. He works for CBS. We'll talk to him about all the things, including our Falcons. And was it a cap situation that held us back from making a move? It's next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You know, Zeno, you identify what happened, right?
Little injury law.
We love talking about the NFL and Joel Corey. This is all he does. He writes, of course, for CBS, is a capologist, was a former agent. Joel Corey, it's good to have you back on the show here on Dukes and Bell. Mike and I were just talking about, you know, some of the teams around the league that are going to have issues moving forward. And I think the one that jumps out to us is the Cowboys, right? You paid Dak all this money. He's hurt now. You paid CeeDee Lamb, and now here's Micah Parsons that you're probably going to take care of. I don't know if that's a winning formula with three guys basically jamming up your cap, but what is the situation, and can Jerry somehow maneuver this thing to create some room so that they might be able to do something? That's not a good football team, Joel.
Yeah, well, Jerry's someone who hasn't been a major player in free agency in about a decade, so he's hit on draft picks fairly well, so don't have Parsons. The thing is that when you do these contracts, it's the later years which kill you, not the earlier years. Dallas is going to kick the can down the road, is which what they did with Dak Prescott's contract consistently, and restructure it. They're going to have about $20 million of cap space to carry over to next year. They're just going to build one within and hope they're going to draft picks and try to hope that the offensive combination of Dak and CeeDee Lamb will bear more fruit than it was this year. It might help if they go out and do something about the running game, because this year they had a big miss in not signing someone who wanted to stay in Dallas, who lives in Dallas in the offseason, Derrick Henry.
I understand they got a lot of guys on those one-year deals, so they got a little bit of cap relief. One team that we talk about, and similar but different, is Miami, putting so much money into Waddle and Tariq Hill, and then Tua, and of course, obviously being a one hit away from losing their quarterback. The way, again, I know it's difficult when you look at SpoTrack and some of the websites, Joel, but it seems like Miami has got some big cap issues coming down the pike.
Yeah, they made decisions last year to combat Tua. They decided they were going to let Christian Wilkins leave in free agency as opposed to sticking a franchise tag on him. They let Robert Hunt go in free agency to accommodate Tua. Doing the Tyreek Hill deal, I don't know if I would have done that, although the way he played his first 2 years in Miami, it was justified on production, but receivers start getting 30, 31, 32. You start seeing some diminishing returns. That's the one outside of Tua because of the concussion issue, which could be problematic for them.
Kind of going around.
You typically don't have two high-priced wide receivers.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. Right. Joel Corey joining us, CBS NFL capologist, contract expert, as we talk about some of the things going on around the league. A lot of Falcon fans, Joel, were saying, why didn't we do something at the trade deadline outside of the interest? Because we talked to Raheem Morris, and, you know, we think the front office was making some calls as everybody was talking about potential moves. But was this cap-related with, hey, they really didn't have the means to do this. Obviously, we didn't give Judon a new deal when he got here. And, you signed Justin Simmons, I think, for basically a little of nothing to bring him in for one season. What's the situation here with Atlanta?
Yeah, you have, like, the fifth most cap commitments for next year. Thank God you're not the Saints. The Saints have close to $330 million in cap commitments, but that's nothing new for them.
Right.
You have about $7 million to carry over. You only have 35 players under contract for next year, so something has to give. It's not a great cap shape, but understand why you didn't make another move. You don't have a ton of draft picks.
Right.
You gave up your third for Judon, who hasn't really panned out because your team has 9 sacks. He was supposed to help shore up the pass rush. You're not in a position where you should be going all in on this year, because I don't think anyone's going to confuse the Falcons for Super Bowl contender. You should win the NFC South. Actually, have a 3-game lead, as far as I'm concerned, because you swept the Buccaneers, so they actually have to end up a game clear of you guys to win the division. But staying put made a lot of sense. You could have absorbed another one of these lower price pass rushers like a Josh Uche, but do you really want two Patriots, ex-Patriots pass rushers on your team? Preston Smith, another older pass rusher, you have one of those. The guy that wasn't dealt, Aziz Ojulari, would have been the guy.
Right.
Because he's been productive, but the Giants weren't willing to give up on him, and you probably would have needed to give up a fifth for him.
It's Joel Corey, guys, Capologist. And one thing, bringing it back to the Falcons, you know, we do have a first, second. We traded a third for Judon. We have a fourth. Don't have a fifth. We lost that for tampering. And we traded the sixth away for the Van Jefferson pickup from the Rams. So do you think that's ultimately it, not to, just to go into that draft? And or they just didn't feel like Legarius Sneed or Ojulari would have been worth that, because we'd have probably had to go with at least one pick this year and maybe another pick from next year.
Yeah, well, I'm not seeing Legarius Sneed getting traded this year because he just got signed. You typically don't give up on a high-priced signing halfway during his first season with a new team. That was a non-starter for me.
I'm sorry, Ladarius. Different apostrophe. Ladarius Sneed, who went to the Lions. Ladarius is the corner. Ladarius is the edge. Sorry about that.
Ladarius Smith.
Yep.
Yeah.
I called him a Sneed, and I screwed up his apostrophe. Sorry about that.
Yeah, Zadarius Smith, yeah, you probably weren't going to have the, you probably didn't have the draft capital for him, although he would have been affordable given the way his contract was structured, that he basically had to just take care of his minimum base salary for the remainder of the year. I don't think if push came to shove, the Lions are going to outbid you for him, even if you were interested, because they have a glaring need at pass rusher of Aiden Hutchinson going down. I'm not believing he could be back for the Super Bowl, but that's a team that should be all in. They're the best team in the NFC, so it made sense for him to go there. You guys aren't getting compensatory picks either, so
right.
I wouldn't have mortgaged any more draft picks to get another pass rusher this year. Because if you guys were 8-2, or you looked like you were going to be a team which could win a Super Bowl, granted, if you get in the playoffs, anything can happen. But I don't have any problems with them not making a move.
What are the Giants going to do with Daniel Jones? Just move on? Eat the money?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's played his last game for the Giants. You've got a $23 million injury guarantee that you don't want him to have some sort of injury where that comes into play. He's got like a $41 million cap hit next year, and you pick up about $19 million of cap room with a conventional release next March before $12 million becomes fully guaranteed for his 2025 salary. Outside of 2022, when he played fairly well, every other year he's been a disappointment, including this year. If you look at him statistically over the past 2 years, he looks like Desmond Ridder.
Joel, here's what's interesting, what you just said about that injury payout. Joe Shane, the general manager, yesterday, came out and said, moving forward, whatever decision we'll make, it will be a football decision. Mike, that's what Joel's talking about.
Right.
That they may bench him just because they don't want to pay out this if he ends up getting hurt. Joel, that's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, we've seen it happen before. It happened last year with Russell Wilson, last two games of the regular season. He was put on ice. Derek Carr the year before was put on ice for the last 2 weeks when they decided they were going to move on, although Derek Carr had started like 90-some-odd games in a row. So when you get to that point where you're done, he's probably going to be inactive as the third quarterback. I remember RG3, his last year with the Commanders, back then the fifth-year option was guaranteed for injury at signing, then became fully guaranteed first day of the following league year. He was in street clothes for all but one game. So if Cousins had gotten hurt, they were not putting him on the field. They were going with somebody else just because they were making sure that the $16 million that he was supposed to make on a fifth-year option wasn't going to come into play. Now getting back to Daniel Jones, his left tackle is gone for the year. You've got a guy who ended up on IR for two out of the five complete seasons he's been in the NFL Year six, he's got durability concerns. He's not playing well. You're not going anywhere. I'm not taking a chance. Although Brian Daboll and Joe Shane may still feel he's the best option to win, and they could all get blown out of there if things can continue going south, notwithstanding the vote of confidence from ownership.
Hey, Joel, before we cut you loose, Matthew Stafford saw him last night, only 15 points for the Rams. He's got one more year left on that deal. What do the Rams do with him?
They don't make the playoffs. They may look to deal him because this is a team which is willing to change course whenever they feel necessary. A couple of years ago, he was on the trading block, although they denied it. So they might be willing to decide to go another direction if they can't turn it around.
Joel Corey, always a pleasure, man. Appreciate you stopping by. Follow him, guys. Check him out. Joel Corey, CBS NFL capologist and contract expert. Thanks again, Joel.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, good stuff. That's a different perspective, guys, on the teams and what's going on and how you maneuver forward.
Does Aaron Rodgers play another year for the Jets?
I don't think so, Mike. I don't think so.
Right? He's got one more year. Speaking of Stafford,
Yeah, and that is all going to depend on, to be honest with you, if they change the entire staff out in the front office. Right.
And I do apologize, Chris, our producer, for not having Legarius Sneed and Za'Darius Smith correct.
Hey,
one guy is bigger than the other.
Well, he is. Coming up, what's the College Football Playoff Committee going to say tonight? And where will the dogs be? It's Dukes and Bell. Where are the dogs going to be at the end of the night, according to the College Football Playoff Committee? It is Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour is brought to you by our friends at Buffalo Wild Wings. Guys, it's Tuesday, which means buy one, get one half off traditional wings at Buffalo Wild Wings.
We got trouble right now.
What? What's going on?
Through the programming. Chris, earlier, our producer booked Frank Schwab from Yahoo Sports. And I don't know if he's upset that Iowa State dropped that game at Arrowhead to Kansas. But anyway, I think Dave Archer is going to be looking to punch Frank Schwab in the head. He was not happy with the commentary about the Falcons.
Well, listen, I said the outside looking in, right? That was the phrase that I used. He's an outside guy looking in. I don't agree with him. And I said, we could argue. Literally in the interview, I was like, oh, I'm going to defend my team here. Let me tell you. Because I think that's how people look at this team. But I don't think it's fair. I don't think that it's necessarily the full case. But, yes, Arch is wondering what basement he's in.
Now, for what it's worth, a couple of guys has hit us up on the text line and also hit us up on our follow us on Twitter. We'll get to the college in just a second. Put them up, C. Dukes and Mike Bell, ATL, reminding us that the Falcons have played three teams above 500 and we're 1-2 against those teams. We lost to Pittsburgh, Kansas City, and, of course, the miracle finish against Philadelphia. Philadelphia is obviously right at their ship, and now they're right now a game over Washington to win that division.
Yeah,
but that's the only team over 500 that we've won.
The one nugget I think that a lot of the national media is missing here, guys, is we've watched every play of the last 4 or 5 years, which has been an unmitigated disaster, right, as we admit. That's what the national media is using their basis on for this season still. The Falcons haven't proven to be consistent winners yet, even though we know, especially from going up to Flowery Branch in the summer, what this team's capable of.
The thing is, though, I mean, real quick, there's no excuse for what happened in New Orleans. There's no excuse. You know, everybody, we talked to guys on the record, off the record, up at the branch. Everybody was ticked off at how the season finished last year in New Orleans.
Facts.
You're going to go down there and you're going to straighten them out. Yeah, they punched you in the mouth in the first half. You know, you had to make an adjustment. You did. But then at the end of the day, you couldn't get the job done. You couldn't protect your quarterback. Quarterback couldn't hold on to the football. And I thought you should have ran the ball a little bit more. Any big juice about going down to New Orleans and setting things straight went out the window. It's a bad loss. And I know that no fan out there, Carl, wants to hear about the Seattle game just being the luck of the NFL season, because that's still BS. We were four plays away from winning that game. But the Saints game is one that's got me going. That's why I'm looking at the schedule going, where am I finding these four wins that are going to get us to 10 wins?
Well, to your point about feeling like there's guarantees, we know there aren't. There are none. Chris, I think the perception is not the reality. It was what you're talking about. But I also think that there is some truth to what the perception is, and we are inconsistent. Like, Mike and I can't sit here and tell you that, you know what, as good as we feel about the team and some aspects of the team, that we are not inconsistent. We are. And that is why you look at those numbers. The Pittsburgh game is interesting because, again, it's the first game of the season. You didn't know what Pittsburgh was going to be. We didn't know if they would win with Justin or not, at what point if Russell would play, would he not. Now they're elevated because not only did that play out, but they made moves at the trade deadline to help themselves. We didn't do anything. So the Steelers are in a different class as far as like how I look at them. Mm-hmm. But the Eagles, Mike, you're right. They've righted the ship. They look like a team that's going to be a tough out. But I'm not going to base it solely on the records. I get it. You don't beat good teams. But I want to see what teams are left on the schedule that you feel like, all right, these are quality wins. What are the quality wins that are left on the schedule? That would be my question. Because I don't know if you look at Denver this weekend, 5-5, and go, well, that's going to be a quality win.
Well, I mean, it's a road win against a team that plays really good defense. I mean,
they are.
But you're right. Nationally, I mean, going to Minnesota, beat the Vikings. Go up to D.C., beat the Commanders.
I agree.
Those are the quality wins. No one's going to give us any credit for beating the Raiders or Giants or Carolina at the last game of the season.
All right, real quick, where are the dogs tonight, Mike? College football playoff rankings, where you have them?
I think they'll be 10. How's that sound?
Okay.
I think the college coaches poll's got them at 10. AP's got them at 11. So I think they're going to keep everybody who's in the big boy conferences with two losses. And the question is, where do they put Texas A&M? I think maybe they may continue to be on the outside looking in.
I do too.
But Georgia, I think, will be at 10, hanging in there.
I think A&M's going to be the 14, 13 area. Here's the interesting thing. You know, you've got schools, again, like Miami that just lost. Are they in front of Georgia this week? Boise has one loss. Mm. SMU has one loss. Are those schools in front of Georgia? Because I'm going to tell you, if that's the case, let me tell you who else is in front of Georgia. Oregon, Ohio State, Texas, Penn State, Indiana, Tennessee, heading into this weekend. We don't know what happens after this weekend.
Guess what Miami doesn't have?
What?
A ranked opponent victory.
It's true. It's true. So you start saying, all right, yes, they only have one loss, but should they be in front of a two-loss Georgia team? That's, to me, is going to be the debate tonight as they start looking at this and saying, all right, here's what we do. And the only reason, guys, it's important is you want to be one of the 12, right? According to the AP and the coaches poll, Georgia's 10 and 11, respectively. Okay, so that's where I think they're going to be. I think they'll be in that 10-11 range going into tonight, and that's where I think the committee has.
Beating the number one team in the country still should carry some weight over a one-loss team that hasn't beaten a ranked
opponent.
Totally
agree.
That's the logic for Georgia over Miami.
On the road. I totally agree with that. So that is where the debate will be. Well, how can a two-loss Georgia team who just lost to Ole Miss be in front of a one-loss Miami team that was top four and running through their conference? Like, that is the argument. But I am totally with Mike on this. Like, that's why you play the schedule you play.
Hey, speaking of Georgia Tech, legendary coach Paul Johnson, a Hall of Famer, he comments on his former assistant, Brian Bohannon, and what happened to him at Kennesaw State. This comes from Kai Millett, who writes for the, I guess, Kennesaw State website. But she writes, quote, this is from Paul Johnson. The quote is, they put him in a no-win situation, talking about Bohannon. He was on his staff at Southern Navy and Tech.
Yep.
He goes, they move up with no budget, no plans, no facilities, and then you expect that you're going to win? That's from the AJC, actually, reposted. But, yeah, I mean, that's just it. If you're going to go up to the big boy level, you pull an upset off of Liberty, and I don't know, as we said yesterday, I'm not qualified to speak on the inner workings of Kennesaw State other than what I hear from Kennesaw State fans who aren't exactly enamored with their athletic director.
Before we get out of here this hour, we've got 30 more minutes. By the way, Hawks coming up tonight. They're in Boston. Trey is not playing. I want you to hear Quinn Snyder talk about this injury.
Oh, boy.
For Trey.
Is this going to make me upset?
I'm not sure. Let's hear it.
I'm not going to get into the specifics of it, but obviously he's out tonight, and we got to figure out how to, you know, without him and a number of guys, figure out how to play well and compete.
Yeah, without Trey to even match, come close to the kind of threes, whoosh, they're going to be bombing up there at Fleet Center. That's going to be tough, man.
Why does he want to get into it?
Is it an extended injury? Is it a conflict with the player over the nature of the injury?
Well, here's where I'm at.
I'm not trying to make a mountain out of a molehill, but
here's
play it again,
at.
Play it again.
Well, here's where I'm at. Hold on. If it's an Achilles strain, which is what it's being reported as, talk about it. What's the big deal? He might be out a couple of games. When I hear this, why don't you want to discuss why your star is out?
I'm not going to get into the specifics of it. But obviously he's out tonight, and we got to figure out how to, you know, without him and a number of guys, figure out how to play well and compete.
I mean, Christian McCaffrey, I know it's apples to oranges, but McCaffrey had Achilles tendonitis in both of his legs, Carl.
He did.
And missed a big chunk of the season. So here's a guy, and I think we all know what happens on a basketball court and the kind of moves you got to make.
I'm not worried.
All right, man. But, and by the way, all right. Apparently, Trey's gonna fly to Switzerland and Germany and get some of that. They're gonna spin the blood and stick it back in the foot.
Yeah,
they'll have a mini Trey growing off his foot.
I just found that interesting. Thank you, Turtle. I don't know why you wouldn't want to. Like, he's got this. Is what the deal is. He might be out a couple of games. It's done.
Well, please, Landry Fields.
When you say I don't want to discuss it, it's like, is there more to this?
Well, I mean, is it gonna be out a month? And you're not willing to, I mean, what? Why? Why?
I don't get it.
By the way, DeAndre Hunter, he was out with that injury with the knee. Then his wife gave birth to a baby. So he had a personal day. I think he still got off on personal leave, right?
He is. Yeah, I think they expect him back at some point this week.
I'm not a betting man, but if I was you, I'd jump on the Celtics tonight with 2 feet, everybody.
I have no comment on that. Hey, 6 o'clock hour straight ahead.
It's the Celtics -16 at home against a trailless Hawks. Hey, man, we'll come back. We already learned today that one Brave is officially gone. Could one be going to a team you really, really, really don't want him to go to? We'll explain next.